Blog Talk Radio.
Coming to you since 1997 on KKUP Radio with over 250 guests and still going strong in their 12th year of weekly broadcasting, the International Taz and Paula Show brings to you expansive, engaging, and groundbreaking intensity on radio and now on the internet airwaves today. Listen live every Thursday or visit Embracing Mother Earth's archives, exclusive articles, ask questions, and receive actual answers from guests anytime at TazandPaulaShow.com. Taz and Paula's special guests are experts coming from all walks of life, energizing our lives with a passion that inspires and teaches us with each of their compelling personal life journeys, with roots from ancient wisdom and bridging it with modern science. We hope today's show touches the wisdom of your heart. And now, Taz and Paula.
Hi, this is Paula. Yesterday, Taz and I received a book in the mail that we wanted to share with our listeners. The author of the book adds a depth into our thoughts, and you can use it every minute of your life. And I was just sharing with Jim, it is a book that you can read over and over again.
Oh, yes. This author has stepped out on stage, and he is steaming, folks. His life has been filled with more accomplishments and life-changing circumstances than most people realize in several lifetimes. Yet it was a simple human moment in London that propelled him to stop, examine, and reconstruct his entire life's calling. Jim White's ensuing development of the world is a safe place philosophy, shared in his series of books, is deeply impacting thousands of people around the world.
Well, good morning. You're listening to the Taz and Paula Show, and I'm Paula Nunes.
And I'm Taz Powers.
I should change that to good afternoon. It's afternoon now.
Well, is the world a safe place? Well, according to Jim White, author of The World is a Safe Place, miracles are out there. They come in many forms. They may come in events, information, or just by some comment from a friend. What really matters is the core. It is the message of love and peace. Jim has learned this from all walks of life, from the homeless to the rich.
Well, after working as a senior executive for high-profile companies like Blockbuster Video, Universal Music Group, and currently the VP at Paramount Studios, Jim has developed a keen eye for spotting everyday miracles and has trained himself to see the world in a very unique way, the same way he hopes millions of others will soon look at the world. Mm-hmm. Well, it's really exciting for us to have you with us today. Welcome, Jim.
Well, thank you so much. I don't even want to talk. I just want to hear you talk about me some more. That's really fantastic. And Taz, good afternoon. And Paula, good afternoon. And we're living a miracle right now that the three of us are on a phone call together. I'm actually in my office here at the studio, and I have a wireless headset on. So talk about miracles. It's just amazing to be here with you both.
Well, you're looking at, it's like looking at our lives from the outside, as you say.
Well, exactly. I was recently at an event, and I was texting a friend who was in Antarctica, and I was jumping up and down because I get really excited about these little things in technology, and I was sharing everybody. I said, look. They looked at me like I was a crazy man. I said, I'm texting Antarctica. Most people didn't even know Antarctica even existed, you know, just, you know, not all that long ago. So the advances that we're making as a human race are just remarkable right now.
Well, we want to ask, what happens when you tell people the world is a safe place?
It's my favorite thing to do, actually. When I do that, I get a lot of responses, and that was probably one of the core essence of the book, to be able to start a dialogue. And it's really interesting. One of the responses is, you know, I agree with you, and I believe that. One of the more common responses is, no, it's not. And when that happens, that's when the dialogue starts. And I step back and look at the person and say, why do you think it isn't? So I don't get into a discussion or argument right away and say, oh, yes, it is, let me prove it to you. I start the thought process with people by asking them why they think it isn't. And then people will right away possibly bring up war, disease, or poverty. They bring up a lot of different things. And then it allows me to get into a deeper dialogue about, do we think there's solutions to those issues? Because let's be real, there's really some hard things happening and have been for a long time in all of human history. We could have a whole radio show just, you know, based on all the atrocities and things that have occurred in the world. But the question becomes, are those situations preventable? How do we react to them when they occur? What can we do to fix things? So it's really about starting a dialogue. I have a series of T-shirts that say the world is a safe place, and it's remarkable just to walk through any kind of shopping mall or down the street and just watch the reaction of what happens.
Oh, I bet.
Yeah.
When did you come up with this vision to write this book?
Well, it was sort of interesting. I talk about it in the beginning of the book when I was a little boy growing up in Iowa, a restless little kid who just wondered who I was from the beginning. I came out wondering what it was all about. I put my fingers in my hair and all over my body, and I just didn't even know what it was to be a human being. So just as a very early age, I was just switched on. And I was taking a nap with my mother, which I really, really didn't like to lay down at all. But we were taking a nap, and it's a very hard thing to describe in words, and I try to describe it in the book. There was this sort of smoky essence, dreamlike state, flickering light. I don't know what it was, and I felt warm and comfortable. It wasn't like an alien encounter, okay? I didn't get zapped with a laser beam. But this feeling came over me, and it instilled a message in me. And then I woke up as a little boy and did what little boys do. I played with G.I. Joes and did all the stuff I did. And then what started to come out was this philosophy inside of myself that I really felt like everything was fine. That at the end of every story, no matter how rough it could be, there was a lesson that was learned for somebody out of it, either the person who it was occurring to or the people around. And I started to look for that good in everything that happened. And to go on another parallel path, I'm a human resources person. I'm the vice president of human resources here at the studio. And I always look for the good in every situation in my daily job. And so it just became a congruency of all my life, outside, inside work, of just looking for that everywhere and finding to the solutions to issues when there's not some good things going on.
Well, you know, last night after I got this book in the mail, I could not put it down. I literally, I read it from page to page out loud to my husband.
Oh, thank you very much.
It was awesome. It really, you know, it refers back to, I mean, you can take it on reading it as if you're reading it for yourself. I mean, it's literally the imprint of back and forth is there. It's merged. And it's amazing. You know, I look at life in amazing ways anyhow, and I believe that nothing's accidental. And so when the doors open, it's just a breath of fresh air because you're thinking, oh, my gosh, what's really next, you know? And this book was really like that. Each page was like, oh, wow, what's next? What is he going to share with us?
Oh, well, thank you very much.
Oh, it was wonderful, Jim. There was one place, well, there's several all through the book, but there's one quote that you say, if there was no one to tell you who you are, who would you be?
Oh, thank you. It's one of my favorite quotes because guess what?
Yeah.
In most cases, we don't have that choice. And so let me give you an example. I love to use this one. Blue is for boys and pink is for girls. So even before you're awake, as soon as you come out of that womb, you're labeled. And why? Pink's not actually, you know, my favorite color. What could pink be for boys and blue for girls? I don't know how that happens. So the point is that we're encrypted really early on with a lot of stuff. And especially in the U.S. and in America, you know, your teeth aren't white enough, your hair is not thick enough. You know, we're marketed to constantly. And it takes a very strong-willed individual to kind of look back at all of that and say, wait a minute, the only person who's going to label who I am is me. And, you know, that is pretty much across all cultures. You're either considered this, you're considered that. And it takes a lot to kind of undo all of that. I see patterns in people all the time that I'm like, is that you or is that coming from somebody else? Who is that person? And when you set out to find out who you really are, it's an interesting place. And when you get there, you say, well, you know who I am? I'm anybody that I wish to be. And, you know, in some people it's difficult for because they're in circumstances where they're not allowed to be able to do that from a physical perspective. And so, but it's a really remarkable thing. And again, going back to my HR career and looking for the good in everything, I have an ability and a gift to look into people and see their spirit and see who they really are. And I think if everybody takes that opportunity just to stop and slow down for a little bit and really look at each other, you can see it. And you see it in the eyes of a newborn child who's not been imprinted with anything fully yet. They're smiling and laughing and just absorbing. And what I do, I'll let you in on a little secret of one of the things I do. Whenever I see a young baby in a crib or a carriage or whatever, and I have the opportunity and they're just glaring at me, I look in their eyes and I think with my whole heart, the world's a safe place. The world's a safe place. You're going to have a wonderful life. Only amazing things are going to happen to you. And I do that, and you should see what happens. They just glow. And then the parents try to take me away because they think I'm a little strange. But I do that and try to always think about everybody. When I see someone walking on the street and I see them limping, I think, I really hope you're not in pain. And I really wish for you that whatever your ailment gets better. And it's interesting to do that because it just makes you feel better yourself.
Do you ever see babies actually almost like they recognize who you are? I mean,
yeah, they do. They kind of lock and they look, and you know, they're receptors like we all are. You know, your eyes and your mind is a reception machine, and it's a projector too. What you put out there, you know, you get back in my mind. And so I'm trying to always walk through the world. And I'm a human being, too. I don't want to sound like I'm Pollyanna and I don't have bad days and hard things happen. You know, it happens to all of us, and that's part of the human condition and experience. But as I've trained myself more and more and more, I find that I'm happy more and more by what I'm putting out there.
Now, I read that you use journaling as a tool, and I love to journal myself. And when I look back at what I've journaled, like 10 years ago,
sure,
I can really see a change in, you know, how I've grown. Do you do that?
I do that a lot. And, you know, really, I'm glad you asked about that because that's how the book sort of started. I was doing all these wonderful travels with my job when I worked for Blockbuster Video. Again, I grew up in a very small town and was lucky to get a job in a video store versus the pizza restaurant or the burger place. And that led me into my entertainment career. But it also led me to open up Blockbuster Video stores in 22 countries all over the world. I lived in London for 7 years, and I was in Australia for many years and studied there. And while I was recounting those stories, you know, writing them down, they started out very simple. I went to the beach today, and I met this person, and then things happened. People died, and I was in an accident, and I was in 9 accidents, and then airplanes crashed into buildings. All these things happened, and I captured all of that in writing. And then all of a sudden, I really realized that there was a very, very cathartic process happening in a theme to every one of these negative situations that had occurred in my personal life, that I found the good in all of them. And that's, again, where I extrapolated, you know, the content for The World's a Safe Place.
Now, you said something about making a choice what you don't want in your life and what you do want in your life. And it's just funny that yesterday I was talking to someone who's an astrologer, and they said there's a lunar eclipse occurring and that we should be writing down what we don't want in our life and what we do. And it just kind of went along with what I read in your book.
Well, that's interesting because I believe it's Saturday, and that's another really great thing to do is to read the world like a book in your life. And if you got someone in your life who's just not helping you or not supporting you, it's okay to move them on. I always say, and I took this from Marianne Williamson, I'm sure you know who Marianne Williamson is, love everybody on the planet, just don't have lunch with everybody. And so you can love everybody, but it doesn't mean you have to hang out with them if they're in a situation where they're affecting who you are. I walk into a room and I see that lady over there, and she's who I want to be like. She's smart, she's established, she looks great, she's articulate. I see this guy over in the corner, and he's being a little unruly, and he's drinking too much, and I don't want to be like that guy. So I think we're Franken people in terms of our personalities, and this goes back to who you really want to be in your life. I look at the people I admire, whether it's Gandhi, or I'm an Einstein fan, just to let you know as well, and I look at the peacemakers of the world, and I want to be like them. I want to build on their ideas, like the Dalai Lama, and I want to enhance their ideas, and I want to bring the collective up. But that's just what my choice is, and it's a path that I've chosen to take. Because I've learned another thing, ladies. If I try to impose any of that on anybody, I start a war, and then I start a conflict. And if anybody walks on this planet and tells you they've got the answer and they're right, run a mile. Because I couldn't wait to turn 40. Some people don't like that, but I couldn't wait to turn 40 because I thought someone was going to give me this big magical book that told me the secret to what life was. And what I realized is nobody really knows what that is. And if they do, I'd be a little cautious.
Well, Jim, with your comment, you know, if there was no one to tell you who you are, who would you be? I love that because that absolutely allows you every second to reevaluate where you are and to look at your belief systems and what
sure.
what you want, where you want it. I mean, period. And who you want to be. If you want to change, you have the capability of doing that.
Well,
it doesn't
and
have to be stalemate, you know?
Exactly. And one of the wishes I would have for everyone to realize how powerful they actually really are. I think that's one of the things that would help everybody feel stronger in a place where they feel weak. And let me give you a specific example about that. Right now, we are reading each other's mind, meaning that what I am saying, and I'm slowing down intentionally, is you're hearing a tape of my thoughts. You're reading my mind. It's not any mysticism. It's my vocal cords responding to my brain and speaking. If you slow it down enough to hear what you say before you say it, then you have a choice to be who you wish to be, meaning that I have a choice for every word that comes out of my mouth to say wonderful things, great things, lovely things, or not. And when you think about it at a very grassroots level, if you speak to everyone, and I'm not talking about falsehoods, saying somebody looks good when they don't or things like that, but I'm talking about spreading joy when you talk to anybody, whether it's at the gas station or when I'm dealing with the senior executives at the studio here. And what I've gotten really good at, because again, being back to human being, if I don't have anything good to say or at least neutral, I just don't say anything at all. I just keep things to myself because the power of our thoughts are so, so amazing. And the power of our word, as you both know with your radio show and your listeners here, it's so powerful. And with that comes great responsibility, I believe.
Well, we feel so wonderful to be able to spread kindness through this particular interview and to show other people, you know, exactly what you're saying. If you don't have anything nice to say, don't say it at all. And
well, here's a good one. You just helped me with this, and thank you so much. How about if you don't have anything nice to think, don't think it at all? that's an original right off the thoughts. Thank you for that one. I'm going to write that one down for the second book. Thank you so much.
Yeah. It's like what gives you the right to imply whatever your thoughts are to someone else without,
And here's the great part about that one is, where did that thought come from? That's always interesting. Is that my original thought that came from me, or did I get it off a TV show? Did I get it? Who told me that? And I find in my career, again, most of the people who are really unhappy, someone imposed a thought upon them about themselves, and they believe it. And it could have been a childhood, it could have been the gym coach, I don't know who it could have been, but they believe it about themselves, and then they walk around imposing their unhappiness around other people. And if you can get to that thought, wherever it is, and dislodge it and change it, or they can change it, then people become happy. It's really, there's a lot of psychology, I think, involved in it in terms of how you process your thoughts and how they come out.
I don't know who said this, but I heard it a long time ago, and it's always stuck in my mind, is what we worry about is actually a prayer to have things come to us, what we're worried about.
Exactly.
So that's always stuck in my mind, so I like put those little worries outside.
Good for you. I have a worry box in my brain, and it's black, and I never open it. I just put stuff in it. I never take it out.
Oh, that's terrific.
Now I want to ask you a question. In your book, you wrote something about you had green moss. You found one day green moss or a green, what was it, all over your clothing?
Yeah, it was a mold. Yeah, it was a mold.
Yeah.
It was interesting. It was one of the darker periods and experiences that I had in my life. I was living in Australia. My partner was very, very ill and was actually dying of HIV. And I was in school and working, and I had all these papers due, and I went to the closet. We had been away for not very long, and I'm not sure if you've been to Australia, but it can be very humid and very moist. And my entire closet, which was a fairly big space, shoes were just covered in this fairly thick, I don't know how fast it must have grown, mold. And I just was numb and shocked, and I thought for a second, wow, my whole life is being encased by this growth of mold. And it just was awakening for me to realize, and how I got myself out of it and made the mold go away. I thought, if this is the worst it can get, if this is the bad, because it was pretty bad in terms of what was happening in my life, that means I've hit rock bottom. That means it's only going to get better. So I used thoughts in the present moment to think about a future when it wouldn't be like this, and I'd be on a radio show with two lovely ladies like I am right now. And so I used the thought process to pull myself and get me through that. To the point where I am right now. And now it just seems like a memory of what happened, and I can write about it, and I can use it as an example to help other people.
Well, that leads me to a question. Is what we see on the outside, and the physical outside of us, seeing things happen, do you believe that that's a reflection of what's happening inside?
Yes, I truly do now. And another little side hobby I have, I read a lot of books on astrophysics and cosmology. I'm a science guy. And I read a lot about quantum theory. And if you're familiar with the concept of, you know, there is no outside reality, you're just seeing what's inside of yourself and projecting it that way. And it's the holographic universe. I truly, truly, truly believe that. And if you jump up at the collective level, what I believe we're seeing right now in the world are a series of choices. Do we want to continue to drill in the ocean for oil? Because look what happens when we do. Do we want to continue to have wars all over the planet because we're seeing what's happening? And back to the technology perspective, there's never been a time in at least the society that I know where all the information is available now, and it's all right in front of you. And now you have a choice. You can turn it off and ignore it. You can try to help it and solve it, like we saw the disaster release with Haiti and the earthquakes that had happened recently. And I think we're on such an amazing path right now as a species and as a collective civilization to start to solve our problems.
Well, it's always there's always a chaos before the next step of evolution. I think that's where we're at. We're right in the chaos.
Yeah, and we're problem-solving beings. I mean, that's what we do. And the remarkable thing, we have a tendency to not celebrate our accomplishments. There's a couple of Mars rovers still running around a couple of years past their life expectancy. We've got a probe, two probes, Voyager 1 and 2, that are outside past the outer solar system. Ah, that's commonplace now. You watch the space shuttle launch, and everybody just goes, oh, they go back to eating their potato chips. There's so many remarkable things. And when you start to celebrate those, going back to our earlier conversation, those are the miracles that are around us all the time. And I think we're at a turning point where people are going to get so sick of reality television, they're just going to want to hear good news, like what you're putting out on your radio waves right now.
Now, yeah, Jim.
Go ahead.
Go ahead, Paul. I was going to say, people are so engrossed throughout their day with various things, and many people have thought about literally picking up a pencil and writing down their thoughts and that kind of thing. How did you really get started when you began this? Was it something that was just in your quiet time you decided just to share this with paper, or what made this really take off for you?
Well, it's funny you should ask that. Because going back to the pink is for girls and blue is for boys, we're conditioned that, oh, are you a writer? Oh, if you're a writer, this is what writers look like, and here's what they have to do. Everyone's a writer, and you can write on anything. You don't have to just go sit down in a special place and have a special pad and a special pen. I wrote on napkins. I wrote on the back of matchbooks. I started writing on everything altogether, and then I stuck it all on a big wall. And because I understand, you know, sort of the formatting of the industry a little bit, making movies, I made a storyboard with all of it, all glued all over the wall, stuck it all up, and I thought, no, this should go over here, and that should go over there, and I kind of shifted it all around until the story just came alive on pieces of paper all over the wall.
So they actually do that at the studio?
Yeah, they do a storyboard. So, you know, the simple story format obviously is beginning, middle, and end, and then you just fill in the rest. And it was a great experiment with this book because I had no idea how to write a book. I'd never done it in my life. And so I wanted the experience of figuring out how to self-publish it. I have probably about 4,000 sitting in my loft in downtown Los Angeles. I live in the center of the city in a 1904 bank building. I have the top floor. I'm very blessed. It's also in an area which was called Skid Row. I'm not sure if you're familiar with the Skid Row in Los Angeles. And that's where I got involved with preventing homelessness. When I moved back from Europe and then to New York and then to Los Angeles, I found my beautiful loft space, and I was so happy. And I went outside and looked around, and there were 4,000 homeless people sleeping on the street. And I truly didn't understand the issue. I was like, well, hold on, what is this? And I went walking, as I do now, talking to the people in the street, and I was like, what happened? You know, what? And people had lost their jobs, and there was drug abuse, and there were all these things. And so I immediately, especially with my Iowa roots, where we want to help everybody, got actively involved with an organization, and it's called Beyond Shelter. And it's, if you want to visit the website, it's www.beyondshelter.org. And what we do is we help homeless families, men and women, if they have children, to not hit the street. And it's been a remarkable experience for me of meeting and helping people.
Wow. When did that start?
It's been, gosh, I guess it's been about 6 or 7 years now. And here's the great tie-in of tying all these pieces of the puzzle together. We did a wonderful fundraiser here at the studio at Paramount on April 29th, where I was able to utilize my connections in the industry with the organization to hold a 500-person fundraiser. And a friend of mine who's a Broadway star came and sang and performed. And it's about networking all of these things that I'm doing for the ultimate cause, and that's to make the world a safe place.
So you're a walking miracle every day.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. I got to tell you, here's a concept. I don't feel like I do anything. I'm always thinking, gosh, I need to do some more stuff and get some more stuff going on.
Well, you know, I can wonder, as a young child, did you have this need to do any writing when you were a child? Is this something that just kind of grew over a longer period of time?
You know what I did as a child? I thought a lot. I'm a processor. When I look at something, I look at it and I think a lot about it. And I look at it upside down and I look at it backwards and I look at all. So most of my childhood was really about thinking. I really didn't pull anything out of my head and put it on the paper. I'll give you an example. In my adult life, I was in New York during 9/11. And I was the head of human resources at Universal Music Group for one of the digital divisions. And I was in the office when the planes hit the building. And I was watching that experience. And it was very, very interesting. I tell stories of joy and love and helping people and the good things that happened there. I was immediately drawn to it after I got our office cleared and got everybody home. I went directly down there, which you could go directly down, you know, to ground zero at the time because everyone was in shock. And I thought, grab a camera, get some notes, write it all down, and I didn't do that. I walked for the next 5 to 7 days just watching what people did, and I held it all inside and processed what happened, and then I wrote about it later. So I usually don't write immediately anymore. I process and then write.
Well, it really happens.
I was just going to say, is writing a way of actually healing?
It's very healing, and it's very sharing. You know, it's another form of communication methodology that we get it out there. So I'm more thoughtful in the way when I write now because I want these words to help and heal, not only myself, obviously, from a cathartic perspective, but other people who read them as well. And I think that's when you were talking about the book and you were able to read it. It's also how you deliver the message, and the message should be delivered in a colorful way where there's color and image, and I think you know in the book there's photographs, and those are all in downtown Los Angeles, by the way, and each word was carefully thought about and put in order in a specific way to make an impact. And the book's not too long because I didn't want to lose people. It's not too short so they didn't get the message. All of that was carefully thought out in the packaging and how it was delivered.
It's a very bold book. It's dramatic. I mean, it's like Paula says, it's a coffee table book. You can put it on your coffee table and, you know, let people just flip through the pages. And
well, I'm going to give you a little surprise sneak peek. I'm actually working on the second one now. I'm about ready to finish it probably by the end of the year. And there's actually three in the trilogy of The World's a Safe Place. The first one's called The World is a Safe Place, as you know. The second one picks up where the first one ends. If you look at the very last page, it'll say, Welcome to the Middle of Forever. And the second book is called The Middle of Forever. And there's a third one coming, which I'm working on at the same time because I'm learning how to do this pretty good now, and you should do them both at the same time. And the third one's called It's Time to Make a Wish. So The Middle of Forever is really about what everybody else thinks. and I put out a request for submissions for people who want to be in the book just to write about what they think. And that's been wonderful. I've gotten multiple submissions coming back. Some are poetry, some are songs, some are just paragraphs and words about what they think about the world being a safe place or not. So that's a little sneak peek of what's to come.
So that's all three of them must be on your story wall.
Yeah, they're coming. I'm getting really good at this. I find out that once you figure it out, it took quite a while. If you look from the beginning of when I really started journaling in the early 90s to when the book actually got published, it was quite a long. It was about 12, 15 years. And so, but once you learn the process and get it down, and as long as you're generating the ideas, which just seem to come very naturally for me, it just becomes a process then. And the second book will be run through a publisher. We're choosing publishers right now, and I'll go a little more mainstream with it.
Now, do you believe that some of this information that's coming through you is actually channeled from the source?
Yeah, I think it's channeled from everything. And the source, to me, is everything that you see. And that can be from the energy level, and it can be from the physical level. I think we're all made of the same thing in terms of the earth. And our biology is part of the ground, and we're all part of the same thing. So I think it's time. There's a really cool concept, I'm not sure if you ladies have heard of it, called the emergence effect. And the concept is that the microwave oven has always been around. Even when we were running around scantily clothed from the dinosaurs, it was there. Its time hadn't come yet. And so if somebody would have thought of microwave ovens there, they could have invented one if they really wanted to. So with that concept is, I think now is really the time for the world to start to question, is the world a safe place or not? And why isn't it? And what do we need to do to fix it? And what are the steps? Going back to the fact that we're very, very smart beings. Sometimes we do silly things, but we're very smart beings. And now let's apply our technology, our mental technology, to solve these issues.
Well, I hope that the ones who are kicking and screaming, they don't want change, suddenly see that our thought process without... we don't want to force it on them, but it's catching. Let's say it's catching.
Yeah, I agree. And, I see this in my workplace all the time. The good thing about adversity, it really breeds creativity and creative solutions. And so when somebody puts a force against you, you find a way around it, or you find a way to encourage or suggest or enhance. And one of the things I never do is put force with force, because all you get is more force back. I want to believe that I'm a little too clever for that. And you'll hear it in my words consciously. I suggest things, or I offer them up, or what do you think about? And if I ever tell you, I've got a whole line of people, if I ever tell them that I'm right, they know to bring me down right away and go, huh, you said you're right? Because I'm not right at all, and I don't want to be right. I just want to have an opinion, and it's worked very, very well for me and my family and the people around me, and it seems to be a good thing for me.
Well, working in human resources, I just know from experience, you hear what everybody doesn't want or they don't like. So being in that particular job, how did you maneuver through all of that without being negative at all?
Well, it's interesting you should say that. I was just speaking before I got on the show with you with some students. They're finishing their MBA. There were 25 students from a university in Montreal, and we were talking about specifically a human resources career and what it is. I consider what I do the solution to the problems, so the people who during their jobs can get them done. So if there's somebody in an office who's worried about anything, another coworker, or maybe it's their insurance or something that's happening, it means they're not making movies for our studio. And so I step right in and say, how can I get this solved with you? Not for you. There's a difference in the play on words there. With you. Because if you just take people's problems away and solve them for them, they find another problem to bring on. And there's no education that happens in the process of it. But I'm fascinated by issues and the complexity of problems and how do you solve them. Because I believe there's not one problem in the world that can't be solved. And I got to quote my friend here, who I love to death, Mr. Albert Einstein. He said, a problem can't be solved within the same frame of mind in which it was created. Have you heard that quote before?
Yes.
I have not, but it's a beautiful quote.
And let me give you an example, and here's what I'm going to call pay dirt. the solution to a lot of these issues, which is an alternative way of thinking outside the box, is to tell people the world's a safe place, or mention it, or suggest it, or show it, or however you want to describe it, because they're going to look at you and go, you're a loony bin, that's not true. And then the dialogue starts, and then I get all excited, because now someone's had to think about it. They've had to look at it, because, you know, we're like cameras. We take pictures, and we look, and it sticks in our mind. And even the people, I did the Los Angeles Times Festival of Books a little while back, and I had a big booth. It said the world's a safe place. We were all wearing T-shirts. My family was there. My mother was there. It was a beautiful booth. And people would just look, and some people would just stare, and then they'd just walk away. And I thought, you know, you had to look at that, didn't you? You took a look at that. That's in your consciousness. Whether you agree with it or not, you've taken a picture of that, and it's in your mind now. And I have these really wonderful things called inspiration cards. I had 20,000 of them printed. And they're the little quotes that you've been reading in the book, each one of the little sections with a little quote. And everywhere I go, I stick them in the tip jar, or I put them in the receipt when I sign a credit card receipt, or I drop them politely. I'm not trying to litter our planet, but I drop them politely in airplane seats or wherever else. And it's been remarkable, the response, because my website, theworldisasafeplace.com, is there, and there's a place to contact me, and people send me messages. Who are you? What are you doing? What is this? And it's fantastic. And those are everywhere that I've ever been in the last, oh gosh, I've been doing it since probably about 10 years now. So it's remarkable what those cards do.
How fun.
It's fun.
Yeah. Well, it says here, you are right where you are meant to be at this precise moment in your life. Believe it. And, you know, when people have a problem in their life, like my granddaughter, she's 22, and they're coming up, and I kind of thought back, you know, years ago, when you started on your path and you could see the progression, and now 20 years further on down the road, you can look back and look at the progression in your life, how things did go, and how you accomplished whatever you set out to accomplish. So there is a pattern to things, and yet you have, again, every moment and every day, you have the choice to make alterations in how you think along the way. And it's nice to know that we are where we are in the moment, and we're meant to be there. It's a learning lesson.
Yeah, and I think it's a great thing, because it allows you to have responsibility for what you do in your life and how you act forward. There's something I wrote in the book, and you probably read that, learn to live with the illusions, not in the illusions. And meaning, unless you really want to be sad, unless you really want to get caught up in all of the things, which sometimes I like that. Sometimes I want to have the full gambit of human emotions, whatever they are. And sometimes it's a little overwhelming, and sometimes it's a little too much. And then I step out of myself, and I watch myself watching me. And it sounds a little odd, but I look and go, well, look how you're reacting to that situation. Because there's a duality that exists in all of us. You know, if you look at biologically, we're right brain, left brain hemisphere. If you look at it in our consciousness, we have that little voice that talks. Then we have this voice that's talking now and all of that. And if you practice with your consciousness, you can separate it. And then you're watching your life like a movie, and I write about that in the book. And then you can sort of say, well, the movie's not going the way I want it. Maybe I'll change the ending. And you get control back of whatever's going on in any situation. In any situation, because there's one thing that can't be controlled, even if you're shackled down to a desk, is what you think. No one can control your thoughts. No one can. And if you can realize that, that's where your freedom lies, is in your ability, and that's where our free will is. Our free will is in, I can't transform myself, I just tried, into an elephant here in my office. I'm trying really hard, but I don't have a trunk, but I can think like an elephant. I can make the noise like one. Or I can imagine that I am, and our imagination is remarkable. So that's where the freedom lies, I believe.
Now, you stated that everyone has a path. They're born with a path. Now, are there people out there that are never on their path and will never be on their path? They've never discovered it?
It's a good question. I think everybody's on their path. Where we run into trouble as a species and a consciousness when we try to assume what the path is for someone and what it should be. So I'll give you an example. I'm suggesting to the homeless people who want help that I can help, but I would never judge who they are and say being homeless is a bad thing. It's not. It's just another thing. And however that occurs, and that's people will say to me, all these atrocities that are going on in the world, and would you stop them if you could? It's not my place to stop them. It's not my place to be able to do that. And as soon as I judge something as wrong, then again, I'm being right. I'm saying that something's right or wrong. I don't think there's right or wrong in this world, and that's kind of a shocking statement to a lot of people. I think there are things that will evolve us all, and I think there are things that are not. And I prefer, personally, again, back to my personal choice, to stay on a path of evolution. And that's just for me. I really try, and I say try because I'm probably not fully successful at it, not to judge what other people do. We're a judgment machine. We walk around, and that's good, that's bad, that's hot, cold, do-do-do. And we do that all the time. Our mind does it automatically because of the conditioning. And when you step back and look at it, everything just is. It's just as it is right now. The tree doesn't look at me and go, you don't look very well today. What, blue is not your color. The tree's not doing that. The tree's just being the tree. And the more we can just be who we are and just be in the world, the better the miracles come. And then you see them all the time, and then you just, I'm like a little kid. Can you hear me? I'm jumping up and down here in my office talking to you guys because I'm so excited about just being right now.
And looking for miracles.
Yeah, I'm looking at them right now. You should see the wonderful office I have. It's sunny here in Los Angeles, and the trees are out, and a butterfly just flew by. And I have a little hummingbird who comes by about 4 o'clock or so and just kind of stares at me and then thinks I'm weird and takes off. And it's remarkable. It's remarkable. And I work in a very hard industry. You know, it's true about the movie industry, you know, that it's a challenging place, and there's a lot of egos and things like that. And I just smile at those folks, and they just look horrified because they're like, why are you so happy? And I'm like, look at what we do. We make happiness for people. We make movies. And it's a remarkable thing. And so that's who I am right now.
Well, you add light to wherever you go when you think the way you think. So
it sounds like it's something you guys do as well.
It's pretty exciting, actually, when you have the opportunity to be able to bring someone on like you, or even look at our life throughout the day and alter your thinking. And like you say, step back. That's pretty exciting.
It's very exciting.
Yeah. You say, okay, what would this look like? What is really taking place? And you're watching this individual, which is yourself, you know, taking the steps that you're taking. And yet, you know, it's like a movie.
Yeah, you know? and it's a gift. If you look at the other animals and species on our planet, we've had a really remarkable gift that we sort of forget about sometimes, and that's the ability to do exactly what we're doing right now, is to stop, look, be analytical, to have feelings about, and have choices. And I think a lot of people feel like they really don't have choice in the world, and I feel like I do.
Yeah. But you know what? People do have choice. They just don't know how to get there.
Right.
Well, we don't want to change people's beliefs, but on our show, and exactly what you're doing, you give people a choice put it on their buffet. I mean, like a buffet of choices. I mean, they can choose what they want, but there's something else to think about or look at.
Yeah, well, and here's the part, I think, and to carry on with that thought in the evolutionary process, you know, it's not all about me anymore. I talk a little bit saying specifically about my thoughts and my place and all of that, but what's happening is we live in a collective society now in a global, very aware world right now where there's some big issues coming, bigger than war and bigger than the oil spill right now. We have a global warming issue, and it's going to affect everyone. It's affecting everyone right now. And the good thing about human beings in most cases, as I saw in 9/11, when one of the catastrophes gets big enough and it affects enough people, everybody says, uh-oh, we all better help each other or we're all in trouble. And I think that's where we're moving towards. I think that the global warming issue is, and pardon my words, it's going to upset some people, a good thing in the way that we're all going to have to get together and figure this one out. There's not one person who's not going to be affected by it. It doesn't matter who you are. If you're a good guy or bad guy, whoever you are, we're all affected by it. And when that starts to happen, it's, you know, the needs of the many are going to outweigh the needs of the few.
Well, our memories tend to be short, but but if something that continues and it's just growing in front of our eyes, we're not going to be able to forget it.
Yeah, it's not one you can hide from, this one. This is one's coming. But you know what I have to tell you? I really believe we're going to overcome it. I believe that it's going to usher in a new era of green technology, which it's already doing. And I believe that human innovation is going to shine through the whole thing. And we're going to look back at this era, maybe not in my physical lifetime this time, look back and go, what were those people thinking? Back in 2000 when they were, you know, living in an ashtray, how were they smoking that planet out, you know? So I really believe as we look back at the history and we look at the world wars and things, look back and go, what were those guys thinking? What were they doing? So as our knowledge grows and our awareness and our mental technology gets more fine-tuned, I really, really with my whole heart believe there's a solution to the issue.
Well, they say every 26,000 years, our planet goes through this kind of upside-down system. And so maybe we're here to view a new format of how we're going to assist the planet.
Yeah, well, I've got a nice winter coat I've been saving just in case. nice parka, all made of sustainable material. So when it gets a little bit chilly here in Southern California, I'm going to be ready for it.
Well, the weather certainly is changing, so you never know what the
next
year is going to bring us.
That's true. But let me give you a little sneak peek just too. I can't hold back. I wasn't going to do this one because I haven't fully done the book. But if you think about the trilogy, the third book is called It's Time to Make a Wish, and it'll pick up after The Middle of Forever. And that book is the one I'm really, really excited about because that one is going to put out there, what would it look like if it was all done? If everybody's fantasy about peace on Earth, no global warming, no more wars, everything was completely done, what would that look like? Because I really believe that in order to get there, you have to at least have a vision of what it would look like. And not just my utopia, but everybody's plan for what the world could be like. And then you work backwards. So you work backwards from the collective having solved all the problems, the middle of forever where everyone's telling their stories, back to the individual, who in this case is me writing the first book. So the trilogy completes the series of what the entire cycle could look like for everyone.
That's like the Native Americans when they do a rain dance.
Mm-hmm.
They their belief is it's already happened.
Yeah, completely. Yeah, completely. That's a really great way of reframing of what it is. I'm thinking about that today, that I'm already believing that my work day's over. I'm sitting at home having a nice glass of wine.
Is that called daydreaming?
That's called daydreaming, yeah, because as soon as I jump off this call, I've got a whole list of people waiting for me to want to complain and not be happy about things. But after speaking to both of you guys, I'm actually really looking forward to it. I'm excited.
You know,
go ahead.
I was just thinking, when you do these books, is what's the most exciting part and the one part that is the thing that you don't anticipate? I mean, for instance, for this particular book, what did you not anticipate while doing this book?
I was really, really pleasantly surprised by how many people would grab it, either the inspiration cards of the book, and go, you know, that's it. And how well the phrase rang true to people. I was a little hesitant initially when we started talking about it because there's been a few people who get pretty adamant about the world is not a safe place. And they want to prove that point very, very, very strongly. And with that sort of energy coming at you, you don't challenge that one. You just look at the person and go, oh, okay. You know, I'm not going to tell you it's not because your belief system is being disrupted by having to have this thought. And some people actually get very angry. So there's been a little bit of anger, I think, that I probably didn't expect. But more importantly, I didn't expect the just welcoming and the embracing of the concept and the idea. I was very fortunate as well to be able to get the trademark for the phrase, the world's a safe place, which is great because it's actually really a brand. And I would really like to have that brand versus some sort of soft drink or some sort of T-shirt company or things like that. That's actually really a brand. And then what it allows me to do with the brand is make it just like another product that's out there. But this one's got a nice social message, a social conscious message in it as well. So I've been able to utilize my business sense, opening up all those video stores all over the world, and incorporate my brand, which is a brand that hopefully will solve some of the issues, or at least create idea generation for a lot of the issues in the planet. So I've gone right into the marketing machine with it completely. And just, I can counter any bad news on TV with this message now. And any kind of ad for breakfast cereal or tires, it's going to be right there as well. And that's going to be an interesting interjection of this. And specifically on the branding of the book, it's a white cover with no wording on the front, the black sleek pages, and you said a coffee tale book. That was intentional design to make it sexy. Because a lot of things in terms of trying to touch the collective consciousness, as we move into an area of more spirituality, it's uncomfortable for some people. And when they see angels with wings or they see crystals and purple colors, a lot of mainstream folks get a little taken back by that because it feels just a little bit too witchy and a little bit too magical. And the world is a safe place as a sleek design marketing brand actually sneaks into that a little bit. And it helps with the mainstream a little bit more.
Well, I noticed that there was no title on the book, and I thought, if you put this on your coffee table, people would just, out of curiosity, open it up.
You got it. You got it. They grab it, and they touch it. And then the embossed cover on the inside was because we wanted people to feel that and touch that. And you'd be able to just have an experience. It's about an experience for me. And my career in entertainment and my life has always been about experiences and providing experiences, kind of like going to the theme park. And I hope that after people grab the book and touch it, they felt like they've been on a ride.
Now, what's the origami? Oops. Sorry.
No, I was going to.
What's the origami on the front page?
It's actually a trapezoid shape. And when you fold it into itself, it folds into a perfect triangle. And the triangle, obviously, is of three, and one, two, three, beginning, middle, and end, mind, body, spirit, all the things with the number three. And I'm going to tell you one more secret, and I shouldn't, but I just can't stop myself. What's going to happen with the second book is the trapezoid on the website is going to fold into itself, and then it's going to explode like the Big Bang, and all the vignettes or the submissions that are coming in for the second book, The Middle of Forever, are going to be available on the website with photos, and you're going to be able to click, and the story is going to open, and you're going to be able to read everybody else's story from all over the world.
Wow, I could just see your storyboard. When you were talking about that, I just saw all these light bulbs coming off in your head. You're doing
perfect. Yeah, you can hear the mad scientist at work inside my head right now, mixing chemicals and getting ready. Yeah, I'm really excited because I've watched the power of Facebook. I'm not sure if you ladies are utilizing Facebook or MySpace or some of the technology. And again, going back to my career, I was actively involved in technology, designing systems to be able to support customer service, et cetera. So I have a little tech background as well. And Facebook is amazing, except it just says things like, I'm ironing my clothes today, and here we are on holiday. So the concept of the second book and the website is, okay, that's great, but what are you doing socially? What are you doing consciously? What are you doing social conscious right now? Are you helping someone? Or here's somebody in Uruguay who's helping somebody, and here's what's going on. So it's all going to be messaging about what we're doing for the good in the world to get it out there.
Oh, perfect.
You'll be able to link and network with other people who are like-minded doing different things.
That goes along with what Gene Houston does, too.
Right.
My question is, you answered part of it, but what do you have planned next? But do you have planned any gatherings or groups that come together now that you said it on Facebook? But, I mean, actually people coming together as groups and using your book and saying, what are we doing socially? What are we doing to help?
Well, that's actually right, starting to happen right now. It's in a grassroots phase right now. What's happening is my co-author is helping me with a second book. He's in outside of Minneapolis in Minnesota, and he has the book in a book club, and they want me to come over and speak. And his name is Brian Peterson, and he's a wonderful editor, and he's going to go a little deeper with me in the second book from a co-author perspective. And so we're building workshops as well. We've been going out and seeing different speakers, Wayne Dyer and Marion Williamson again, and different people to try to put together some sort of workshop program that'll either be live, video, any other way we can get it out there. So we're just in the grassroots part of that right now. It's very, very exciting.
Like a webinar, maybe. A webinar.
Yeah, a webinar. And I'm not sure if you saw the podcasts that were going on with Oprah Winfrey when she was talking to Eckhart Tolle, and they were talking about A New Earth. Did you see any of those, ladies? Did
no.
you catch those?
Mm-mm.
They were remarkable, and they were hitting, I'm not even sure how many millions of people, I believe there were 10 of them, where he was conversing with Oprah, and they were talking about different sections of the book and what they believe was happening with consciousness, and it was remarkable.
Oh, wow, I just got chill.
Yeah, if you type it into Google, I'm sure you can find it. They're still out there, and it was really fantastic because Oprah's obviously a big proponent of consciousness and awareness and making these better.
Mm-hmm.
And I actually have friends who work there, which is going to be helpful later on.
Oh, yeah. You got an in.
He laughs with a diabolical laugh here on the phone. So, again, always tying it back to utilizing the gifts I've been given, both as a human being personally and the gifts I've been given through my career and networking and meeting people and the 20-plus countries I lived and worked where I still keep in contact with the people. Because when I do this or do that, I want it to touch everybody.
Your excitement, I mean, it's just contagious.
Oh, well, thank you. Thank you. I appreciate it. It's always so wonderful to talk about this because it re-energizes me and gets me to work on it a little bit faster and creates a little bit more urgency in myself to really keep the motivation and really keep it going.
I look forward to going to a the World is a Safe Place conference.
Perfect.
Yeah.
Perfect. Well, I'll put down your reservation now and make sure you get really, really good seats.
Okay.
All right. Well, you know, this I can just see this, you know, when people even have a glimpse of what Paula and I got to read last night, if they grab your book, it literally lifts the fear out of the situation for people. They really get a new concept. It's a transformation. It's literally, it lifts the thinking pattern. And the website, I don't have it here, Paula.
It's www.theworldisasafeplace.com. Theworldisasafeplace.com. I spell it and say it slow like that because when I was setting up the business and trying to set up all the business paperwork and the phones and all that fun stuff, the different people I was dealing with go, huh? And I would have to spell it because people just aren't used to saying that or thinking it, and it was really interesting. And a woman would go, the world is what? The world is a safe place. So forgive me if I speak pedantically a little bit about it and kind of slow down with it. But it's really funny because I started to realize people just aren't used to hearing that at all. And when they do, they can't even spell it. So let me help you with getting it out there now. And so that's really interesting. Yeah, and the book's available online. And there's some little short synopsis and photographs that I took from all over the world when I was in different places and put them on the website, and from England to Australia and everywhere. And it's just been a really, really remarkable project. I've had some great help from wonderful people. Family's been very supportive. When they couldn't get me and were pounding on my door because I was up crazy all night long, you know, trying to write and working and doing things. So special thanks to everybody who's been involved in helping me with all that.
Well, thank you for being here today with us and bringing a new insight for our listeners as well. Everyone always needs that little magical touch, and you definitely have brought it.
Oh, well, thank you very much. I appreciate it.
I want to leave today with how you dedicated this book. You said, "The World is a Safe Place is dedicated to all the people in the world who seek answers and the truth and who are not afraid by what they find love." I think that's perfect.
Thank you.
Yeah, oh, it is. You have a blessed time, no matter what you're headed for. We look forward to having you back with us again in your second and your third book here on the trilogy. And we really thank you for being with us. It's been
Taz and Paula, thank you so much. I seriously really appreciate it. And I've got all these ideas. As soon as I get off here, I'm going to start writing some more things down. And I just want to let you know, it's so nice to meet two really fabulous mirrors.
Well, you energized us today, and we're sure that you did that to our listeners. So thank you so much.
Perfect.
So have a great day creating.
Thank you very much, and I'm gonna get back to it and wait for my hummingbird to come by and say hello to me and look at me strange and then fly off again in a couple of hours.
Okay.
Okay.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye, ladies. Thank you again.
Oh, you're welcome.
You're welcome.
Well, we are just now talking to Jim White, the author of The World is a Safe Place, and it is a table coffee table book that everyone would be sure to have and enjoy while it's sitting on their coffee table and actually sharing it with others. We hope that you enjoyed our interview with Jim White. We sure did. So have a great day. Thank you. Bye-bye.